And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, listening live on Joy 620 every Tuesday afternoon at 5. Or you're listening to the archive show via podcast on investinghope.com or Podbeam or TuneIn app or Google Play app, wherever podcasts are found. You can listen to this show, and we are certainly grateful for that. We got a lot to cover today, though. Over the last week, there have been a number of articles discussing abortion. Folks writing in favor of, folks writing in opposition of, folks writing in opposition of the in favor of article, and then just a bunch of people responding to different articles that was written. And so what that means is that at least a conversation is being had. Now we're going to walk through this, and instead of responding in writing as I'm reading through all of this, my choice is to respond in voice, and so that's what I'm doing here. And so there was an article over in the Atlantic, theatlantic.com, you know, a pretty good news source for a number of different areas, and I would encourage you to look at. But there's an article talking about abortion and talking about the how the conversation should change and how difficult of a conversation it is. And from reading the article, it seems to me the author, now maybe I may be wrong on this, it seems to me this author of this article is not overly pro-abortion, but certainly thinks that Roe v. Wade was probably a good thing. After we go through this article, we'll look at another article in the Washington Examiner that kind of was a response to this one. I believe there was another in the National Review that was a response. And so we'll kind of walk through this and just answer the things that I think are problematic within all the articles. And then go from there. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. It's going to be a good show, and hope you enjoy it. So we'll start with the article in the Atlantic. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's awfully long, and I would just encourage you to search it out. But I am going to go about three quarters of the article in. The person talks, goes into the ultrasound and why the ultrasound is something that changes minds and even for the author of this article, makes it difficult for her in having the conversation. One thing I would point out, just to give context, the author starts with talking about pre-1973, so before Roe v. Wade was decided, before abortion was the law of the land. She talks about people self-aborting or going to doctors and receiving illegal abortions. And she talks about how Lysol, which is interesting, Lysol was used in many of those cases, not with just women at home, but actually doctors giving Lysol in a very graphic manner, doing things to these women. Many women died because of it, not just the baby in the womb, but also the woman that was pregnant. It talks about the issue with women, even women that were married and in steady relationships that didn't want to have babies and didn't want to get pregnant, but found themselves pregnant, and what that meant. And so that gives context to where we lead up. And so because of that, this author is saying, because of all that, we needed 1973. We needed Roe v. Wade because people were being, were self-aborting or having illegal abortions. My response to that is just because some folks were taking upon themselves to end the life of another human being doesn't mean we need to make a law that then legalizes the ending of that life. Like, do you understand that? I mean, we can't get to a place where we say, well, look, folks are taking the lives of other people illegally and it's hurting everybody involved, so we need to legalize it so that we can have regulations so that then those regulations and those doctors can properly dispose of the baby in the womb. That isn't logical. That is not the next logical step. The logical step is to say doctors that were inserting Lysol and spraying Lysol inside the womb of women should go to jail. That's what should have been said. Not, oh, because this, we need to have regulations in place so that they're doing safe abortions. What is a safe abortion? And we've had this conversation on this show multiple times. A safe and successful abortion means that an individual human life is ended. You see, we don't talk about that enough. We say niceties like, well, a safe abortion means that the mom is okay and her health is okay. Completely denying the fact that a successful abortion ends the life of a human being. Yeah, the mom may be okay, but the baby in the womb isn't. And the definition of a botched abortion means that a baby survives. Think about the wrongheadedness in that. And how we have rationalized and justified the ending of human life because we call it women's health. Because we call it, simply abortion. We don't talk about what happened there. And so let's pick up in this article. It says, the first time I saw one of the new 3D ultrasounds of a fetus in utero, I wasn't entirely sure what I was looking at. It wasn't anything like the black and white images I was used to seeing. It looked otherworldly, like we'd finally made contact with a planet we've always wanted to reach. In part, it was the glowing shade of amber that doesn't suggest anything medical or technological. It calls to mind something almost ancient, something that suggests the beginning of all things. It reminded me, both in color and somehow in meaning, of the earliest photographs of the bog people of Northern Europe, a phenomenon that had absorbed my attention when I was very young. Those ancient and particular faces, those people you could easily have picked out of a crowd, buried deep in the peat for more than 2,000 years, keeping their secrets slumbering. When farmers cutting turf began discovering them in the 1950s, they were so perfectly preserved that the men assumed they had uncovered the remains of very recent murder victims, not the bodies of people who had lived before the time of Christ. And that was the shocking thing about the bog people. They were so clearly like us, so obviously human and individual. These sonograms are so richly detailed that many expectant mothers pay to have one made in a shopping mall studio, much in the spirit in which they might bring the baby to portrait studio. They are one thing and one thing only, baby pictures. Had they been available when I was pregnant, I would definitely have wanted one. When you're pregnant, you are desperate to make contact. You know he's real because of the changes in your body. Eventually, you start to feel his. The first kicks are startling and exciting, but even once they progress so far that you can see an actual foot glancing across your belly and disappearing again, he's still a mystery, still engaged in his private work, floating in the aquatic chamber within you. More in touch with the forces that brought him here than with his life as it has lived on the other side. For a long time, these images made me anxious. They are proof that what grows within a pregnant woman's body is a human being. Now listen to that. For a long time, these images made me anxious. They are proof that what grows within a pregnant woman's body is a human being, living and unfolding according to a timetable that has existed as long as we have. Obviously, it would take a profound act of violence to remove him from his quiet world and destroy him. Quote, most abortions happen in the first trimester. End quote. A very smart and very kind friend reassured me. I didn't need to worry about those detailed images of babies. By the time they had grown to such recognizably human proportions, most of them were well past the stage of development in which the majority of abortions take place. And I held on to that comforting piece of information until it occurred to me to look at one of those images taken at the end of the first trimester. I often wish I hadn't. A picture of a 12-week fetus is a test. Some people say that such an image doesn't trouble them, that the fetus suggests the possibility of a developed baby, but is far too removed from one to give them a pause. I envy them, she says. When I see that image, I have the opposite reaction. I think, here is one of us. Here is a baby. She has fingers, toes, by now eyelids and ears. She can hiccup, that tiny chest quaking motion that all parents know. Most fearfully, she is starting to get a distinct profile, her one and only face emerging. Each of these 12-week fetuses bear its own particular code. This one bound to be good at music. That one destined for a life of impatience, of tap-tap, tapping his pencil on the desk, waiting for recess. What I can't face about abortion is the reality of it, that these are human beings, the most vulnerable among us, and we have no care for them. How terrible to know that in the space of an hour, a baby could be alive, his heart beating, his kidneys creating the urine that become the amniotic fluid of his safe home, and then be dead. His heart stopped, his body soon to be discarded. The argument for abortion, if made honestly, requires many words. It must evoke the recent past, the dire consequences to women of making a very simple medical procedure illegal. The argument against it doesn't take even a single word. The argument against it is a picture. This is not an argument anyone is going to win. The loudest advocates on both sides are terrible representatives for their cause. When women are urged to, quote, shout your abortion, and when abortion becomes the subject of stand-up comedy routines, the attitude toward abortion seems ghoulish. Who could possibly be proud that they see no humanity at all in the images that science has made so painfully clear? When anti-abortion advocates speak in the most graphic terms about women, quote, sucking babies out of the womb, they show themselves without mercy. They are not considering the extremely human, complex, and often heartbreaking reasons behind women's private decisions. The truth is that the best argument on each side is a good one. And until you acknowledge that fact, you aren't speaking or even thinking honestly about the issue. You certainly aren't going to convince anybody. Only the truth has the power to move. You know, it's interesting, this article. It goes further, and it continues on. But we'll stop there. As we look at that, and as we think about that, again, I don't know where this person lines up, this particular author, if she's pro-choice, pro-life, or somewhere in between. But as we think about that, you know, she says both arguments are good. And until we recognize that both arguments are good, then we're never going to reach anything. The reality is, it's hard for me to see, and I get it, I'm biased. I can't see a good argument for ending the life of another human being. I'm sorry. But what about self-defense? Okay. If someone breaks into my home and I got to defend my family, I want to stop them. But my thought process isn't, I'm going to end the life of this human being. My thought process is, I'm going to stop them and protect my family. But you see, the abortion, by definition, is ending the life of another human being. The very act, the mission of the act is to end the life of another human being. And so I would agree that a lot of folks don't recognize the humanity of the child in the womb. And because of that, they dismiss it. And because of that, they say abortion is no big deal. That's ignorance. And we shouldn't celebrate ignorance, and we shouldn't be okay with ignorance. And are there some folks on the pro-life side that are whack jobs and they go a little too far? Maybe. Certainly there are. We've seen those in the past. But they point out here that showing the graphic images or describing what happens in an abortion is not showing mercy. What are you talking about? Like at Hope, we're not showing the pictures of what happens in an abortion, but we're going to talk about what an abortion is. Don't you think people have the right to know that? And I'm sorry if the language is graphic. I'm sorry if the language makes you uncomfortable, but that is what happens. Depending on how far along you are, the baby is taken out piece by piece. That is what happens. So we either be honest about the procedure, or we're dishonest about the procedure. But here's the thing. If it's not a life, if it's not a human, if it's just the beginning of what we know to become human, then why does it matter how we describe it? Why is it a tough decision? Why does it make people uncomfortable? You know why it makes people uncomfortable? You know why it matters how we describe it? You know why it's a tough decision? It's all of those things, because we know that we know that we know that is an individual human life in the womb. We know that we know that we know that that is where we also got our start. And when we neglect that fact, we dehumanize humanity. And that's a problem. We'll talk more when we come back. I am so into you. I can't think of nothing else. So as we continue to have the conversation, you know, it's important that we look at these issues and talk about them. And so I do appreciate the article from The Atlantic. I appreciate the article that I'm about to read from The Washington Examiner. I appreciate the article in The National Review that I'm also going to walk through as we have a response and a back and forth on these issues. But look, folks, the reason why we talk about this every week, the reason why we go through this is because lives are being ended in the womb. at a very high rate. A very, very high rate. You see, this isn't just a couple a day. This isn't just a couple a week. Some estimates it's 3,000 a day. 3,000. It's close to 60 million since 1973. You see, so this is why I have this conversation. This is why we talk about it every week. This is why there's articles being written. This is why, as my generation comes up, you're seeing more articles be written. Why? Because we've watched. We've seen our siblings via ultrasound our entire life. We've seen our own children via ultrasound our entire life. My kids went with me and my wife to see their little sister in their mom's belly. Like, their entire life, this is what they've seen. To them, there's no question it's humanity. To them, there's no question this is an individual human being. So now people are starting to wrestle with it. We no longer have the argument of, I don't know what's going on in there. I don't know if it's a life or not. When does it become a life? I don't know. We no longer have that because we know. And now what we're finding is the abortion advocates are moving the goalpost. Now they're saying, well, it's not really a heartbeat, it's electrical pulse. What? Like that's science? That's rational thought? No, what that is emotions getting in the way. Now they would claim that pro-lifers let emotions get in the way, and certainly that happens. But when you start moving the goalposts and saying it's not a heartbeat, it's actually electrical pulses that could seem like a heartbeat but not really a heartbeat and doesn't point to humanity, then you are moving the goalposts and you're not being honest. You're just not. And so when we hear things like, we need to care for the moms in these situations, I agree. When they say pro-lifers, or this article, the headline says, this article in the Washington Examiner, here's the headline, listen to this. The anti-abortion movement must focus on mothers just as much as babies. Now you read that headline and you think, wow, the anti-abortion people, which are the pro-life people, must not be focusing on mothers. That's wrong. The headline's not true. There are 3,000 pregnancy centers in this country. Many opened right after 1973. Our sole focus is to love moms well so that babies would be born. We're not picking one over the other. We're not pitting one over the other. We celebrate both. The pro-life movement is pro-mom, is pro-woman. Come with me to Washington, D.C. in January. Look at the amount of women and moms that are there. Don't tell me we're not pro-woman or pro-mom. Of course. Of course we should focus on moms. You know what bugs me? Is this headline doesn't say the pro-abortion people, the pro-abortion movement must focus on babies as much as they focus on moms. No, you're not going to see that article. You're not going to see that article in the New York Times, in the Atlantic, in the Wall Street Journal. No, because who's the one that always has to shift and compromise? It's those anti-abortion people, those crazy right-wing Christians that don't know anything and they're ignorant, and all of them are barefoot and pregnant all the time. So no, you're not going to see the article, the headline that says the pro-abortion movement must focus on babies as much as they focus on women, on moms. You see, because they don't have to do anything. It's the same thing like I talked about last week. When you had a medical journal publish an essay from doctors and from organizations, pro-abortion organizations, saying that pregnancy centers are so well-funded through license plate sales that abortion clinics can't even compete with them, which is an outright lie. That's not even stretching the truth. That is an outright lie, and they're not called on it. They were called on it on this show, but they're not called on it because why? Because they don't have to shift or compromise. They can say what they want to say. Just this past week, David DeLayden, who exposed Planned Parenthood for selling aborted baby parts, exposed them. He didn't lie. He used their own words. Exposed them for what they were doing, breaking the law, and what happened? They sued him, not for defamation, because he was being honest about what they were doing. They sued him because he had a hidden camera, which ABC, NBC, CBS, every news outlet has always done and been okay with. But a pro-life organization seeks to get the truth out, and he is found guilty and has to pay the abortion industry $800,000. Now, they're appealing that. And so that's where we are. And I'm a little amped today because it's frustrating to me. Again, like I said last week, if you combine all the budgets of the pregnancy centers in this country, you wouldn't even equal the amount of money Planned Parenthood, not all the abortion industry, just Planned Parenthood, you wouldn't even equal the amount that they receive from your tax dollars in the federal government. Yet they're going to write an essay and say that we're so well funded they can't compete. Give me a break. And so the Washington Examiner, Kimberly Ross, wrote a response to the Atlantic article. And she says, the abortion issue is especially divisive. On the one hand, the abortion rights crowd believes personal freedom is the greatest and highest good. Now, I would argue with that. They don't believe in personal freedom. Certainly not personal freedom of the baby in the womb. On the other hand, those who are anti-abortion hold tightly to the idea that the right of life supersedes all. As expected, the overwhelming majority of Republicans and conservatives fall in the latter group. We draw our inspiration from principles laid out in the Declaration of Independence, which famously notes that our unalienable rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life comes first. Despite political changes or increasing cultural pressures, the anti-abortion movement must be unwavering on the belief that unborn life is worthy of protection. Just as critical is the need to gain anti-abortion converts in a society that treats abortion more casually than ever before. In a recent piece, in the Atlantic, titled The Dishonesty of the Abortion Debate, writer Caitlin Flanagan discusses both the worth of women who face unplanned and unwanted pregnancies and the unborn lives that they carry. She describes horrific cases where women chose to self-abort when abortion was illegal. In some instances, the women died as a result. As a female and a mother myself, I can certainly relate to the stress associated with pregnancy. Parenthood is life-altering. Sadly, some women and men conclude that they are not ready for it, and in the end wrongly decide that destroying the new life in the womb will solve the problem. Although there is no room to waver when it comes to being honest about the unborn, Flanagan, who is for abortion rights, still makes some points that should be considered by all. And, of course, I read most of those points earlier. When considering pregnancy, it is tempting to place nearly all the focus on the life in the womb. This is understandable, as these new creations are entirely dependent on the mother and have a fragile months-long journey. It will continue further when we come back, but look, the reality is the pro-life movement is not focusing solely on the baby. It never has. It never will. We are pro-woman, pro-mom, and pro-baby. We'll talk more when we come back. So it's another week as we continue the conversation on life and abortion. And there's been a few articles out, and we've already looked at some in terms of the one in the Atlantic that is really from someone that is okay and for abortion rights, but at least is being honest about what's going on in the womb. And then we looked at one kind of a response in the Washington Examiner from someone that's pro-life, a conservative, that is saying, you know, I appreciate those arguments, but we need to focus and agreeing. We need to focus on women and the baby and moms and the baby. And here's the part that upsets me about that line of thinking. That line of thinking makes it sound like many in the pro-life movement aren't supporting mom and baby. They're only supporting baby. Am I pro-baby? 100%. I have four. We lost one in miscarriage, so we've had five pregnancies as a Wood family. I drive a 12-passenger van. I love my wife. My mother-in-law lives with me. I am pro-baby and fully pro-woman. I have three daughters. There's no getting around that. And so to act as if, oh, these anti-abortion people, these pro-lifers only care about baby, that's been a straw man argument for years. And at some point, someone has to stand up and say, that's not true. It's just not true. But instead, we write articles and say, you know what, we do need to, we need to love mom and baby. We need to focus more on, just as much on mom as we do on baby. Folks, we are. We are. If you follow any kind of cultural issue, and you're looking and saying, okay, who is trying to appease one side or the other? Who is trying to bend? Who's trying to make compromise? Who's trying to do that? It is always those that lean conservative. Always. I mean, even this week with what's going on with Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A makes a decision to reallocate some funds. Now we gotta, there's some things we need to look at and see exactly what the motivation is behind that, but it appears on the surface that some activists, LGBTQ activists, who have been hounding and hammering Chick-fil-A for the last couple years because of their stance on marriage, it appears as if they had a victory as some funds are being reallocated away from these terrible controversial organizations like the Salvation Army and FCA. I hope you hear the sarcasm in my voice. They're not controversial organizations, but that's where we are in 2019. And so Chick-fil-A says, look, we're gonna reallocate, we're gonna refocus, look at our funding and how that model looks, and we're gonna focus on education, we're gonna focus on hunger, we're gonna focus on homelessness. And you think, okay, well, they made a compromise, they made a shift, they're trying to appease these extreme activists. So surely these extreme activists are going to be happy. Spoiler alert, they're not happy. These organizations are posting today, look, that's not enough. We need more from Chick-fil-A. We need them to do more. We needed them to do this. We needed them to do that. They got to do more. They're not doing enough. They got to change their policies. They got to come out in full support. They got to not only be tolerant, but they got to support. They need to close stores. And so in seeking to appease, what have they done? They've made everybody angry. Everybody. And so that's where we are with the cultural issue of abortion. The pro-abortion side have used it's gone from women are aborting their babies in back alleys with coat hangers, which there wasn't, that might have happened, but it wasn't, there's not a ton of evidence that millions and millions of people were doing that. But that was an argument that they used for a long time. And because of that argument, they got us to 1973 with Roe v. Wade. Well, then they say, look, we just want safe, legal, and rare. No one wants an abortion, but we just have to have the right for one just in case there's a need for it. But we don't want it. We don't want it to happen often. We just want it safe. We don't want it in the back alleys with coat hangers. We don't want to use Lysol. We just want it safe. We want it legal, regulated, and very rare. Very rare. That was the mindset. That was the mantra of the abortion movement. So reasonable people go, okay, well that, maybe that's not bad. Safe, legal, and rare. Maybe regulation is good. Rare is good. We don't want it to happen a lot. And so what happened? So you had conservative judges, you had pro-lifers, you had even folks within the church say, look, maybe we do need this. Maybe we need Roe v. Wade. Maybe we need abortion legalized in this country to protect people. And so we find ourselves with abortion being legalized in this country. Well, then you have states that say, well, it seems as if we're going to do this, we at least need to restrict abortion. Like, abortion can be a right, but we need to restrict it so it's not happening throughout the pregnancy. So you have some states that are saying, look, I think we need to put in places like 20-week bans. We need to no abortion in late trimester. We need to really look at this. And then what happens? The abortion industry comes out screaming, you're anti-woman. You're anti-woman. You're simply pro-baby. All you care about is baby. You're anti-woman. That's what we've heard. And so we respond by going, hold on, we're not anti-woman. We're not anti-woman. We just want some restrictions. And then you have pregnancy centers operating all across the country, loving women every single day, loving moms every single day. But it's always the pro-life side. It's always what they would call the anti-abortion side, appeasing and making compromises. It's always us. And so that's where we are. And so it went from, look, we just don't want women having abortions in back alleys with coat hangers. It's got to be safe, legal, and rare. To fast forward to 2019, and what are they arguing? We need abortion on demand anywhere for any reason. And they're not even willing to say if a baby survives an abortion, it deserves the protections of the Constitution of the United States of America. And if you don't think I'm being honest on that, go look. They've tried to pass a bill in Washington simply stating if a baby survives abortions, it deserves protection by the Constitution of the United States because it's an individual human being, citizen of this country at that point, and they won't even vote for it. So who's the ones being dishonest here? At some point, we have to be bold enough to say, no, stop it. Stop telling me I'm not pro-mom. Stop trying to get me to apologize for wanting to protect babies in the womb. Stop trying to get me to apologize for wanting to protect moms. Stop trying to get me to apologize for protecting life. Because I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to shift. I'm not going to move. I'm not going to compromise. It's okay to say no. Because the reality is we are, the pro-life movement is, pro-mom and pro-baby. It just is. Who do you think's adopting children? The pro-life movement is. Who do you think's fostering children? The pro-life movement is. Who do you think's taking in those single moms? The pro-life movement is. Who do you think's standing with the birth mom that's placing her child for adoption? The pro-life movement is. At some point, we have to stop and say, look, You've called us enough names. You've twisted things that we've said enough. You've made up lies about us enough. We're going to keep serving. We're going to keep working. We're going to keep fighting for life. At some point, we have to stop this. Look, if you're listening to this today and you are pro-life, I salute you. It's not easy. The reality is there are babies in the womb that are going to have their life ended today in very graphic manner. There are moms that are going to be coerced and pushed into abortion today by a trafficker, by an abusive husband, by an abusive boyfriend, by a pimp. And dare I say, by an abortion worker who is trying to get dollars from that woman. You see, our movement is pro-woman and pro-life. The abortion industry is pro-money. That's what they're pro. We'll be back.
We'll shoot you right down off of your feet.
So hopefully today's conversation has been enlightening. If you can't tell, I was a little amped today to have this conversation because I get frustrated. And I said in the beginning that I was going to respond to these articles with my voice via this show and podcast. And I'm probably going to respond to these articles in writing as well. And you'll be seeing that in the near future at investinghope.com or at Pregnancy Help News or at Save the Stork. Somewhere you'll see that. Because look, at some point we have to be bold enough to say, I'm done apologizing for this. I'm done twisting and trying to appease what culture and society would have me do. The reality is, look, we're gospel people. My pro-lifeness comes from my gospel nature. Like from who I am as one of God's. And so because of that, the world is not to determine where I stand on things. And the reality is, the pro-life movement has for a very long time and will be for a very long time pro-mom and pro-baby. You see, it's society, it's culture that pits the baby and mom against each other. It's the abortion movement, the abortion industry that says you can't have your baby and your dreams. You're going to have to pick one or the other. That's pitting them against each other. Our message as pro-lifers is you can, in fact, have your baby and your dreams. You don't have to choose one over the other. And we're going to be here for you. We're going to walk with you through this. We're going to love you in this. And you know what? Even the moms that come to Hope and eventually get an abortion, guess what? They're still loved well by Hope and our staff and volunteers. It's not as if we write them off. It's not as if we say, you're no longer welcome here. And so these myths, these lies about the pro-life movement have to end. And the only way they end is if we get out and be vocal about it. And if we respond to mischaracterizations when they come out. And so hopefully today gave you some information that you can use, that you can kind of think on and walk through. Maybe you can share the show with somebody else that's struggling with it. Maybe it can give you some hope that, look, the pro-life movement is strong and doing really good work, and it needs to be celebrated for that. So as we shift gears just a tad as we end the show, I do want to mention that coming up December 6th at Maker City Church, we're going to have a Christmas concert. It's our third annual Christmas concert. If you'll remember, 2 years ago we had Lawson Bates. Last year we had Josh Loveless. This year we have Ready for Rain. And the concert is December 6th. Doors will open at 6:30. The concert will begin at 7 and we'll go for an hour and a half or 2 hours. General admission is $15. VIP package is $50. And children under five years and under are free. And it's going to be at Maker City Church, which is over on Fifth Avenue. It's going to be a great night. We're going to sing Christmas songs. We're going to see worship songs. Ready for Rain is going to have some special guests that I'm excited to tell you about in the coming weeks. But mark your calendars. Go buy your tickets. InvestingHope.com. You can click on the events tab and get your tickets there. We would love to see you out at Maker City Church on December 6th. Again, doors open at 6:30. It's going to be an amazing night of worship and Christmas music, fellowship. We hope to see you out there. We'll talk to you next week.